Thanks so much for tuning into Apologetics in the City with Calvin Moore. I am your host, Calvin Moore, and this is my first episode of doing this. So, since it is the first episode, first, thanks so much for being one of those people who decided to listen. And two, I'm going to try to explain to you why exactly I decided to do this particular podcast, Apologetics in the City. And I guess I'll start off by talking about the latter half of the title there and focus on the city part. I have lived in the city for just over 10 months now, coming up on a full year, and really excited about that. But I moved here because God called me to move here and be a part of a city. Now, that obviously has come with some major concerns on the part of a lot of people. Generally, the city is not where you go. The city is where you visit, and then you go back to the safety of the suburbs or to rural America. And that tends to be the point of view of a lot of Christians, which is not just everybody, but Christians also. I remember telling a lot of my Christian friends, hey, I'm moving to the city. I feel God has called me to move there. And I kind of got a lot of raised eyebrows, especially when I told them what city I was planning to move to. You see, I live in a Midwest city called Detroit, Michigan, which has not recently fallen on hard times. We've been on hard times for a very, very long time. More recently, however, we've been in the news for political scandals with our former mayor, who has been indicted on federal charges and now serving, I believe, 25 years in prison. So that's made major news. That's been kind of a black eye on our city. And then we are the first major American city to file for bankruptcy. So that has been another thing that people have kind of raised their eyebrow and asked, why would you ever want to move there? What good could possibly come out of the city of Detroit? And here's the thing. I've lived here for just over 10 months and explored the city all summer long, and now we're into the winter months, and I've really fallen in love with the city. I really have seen a lot of good here in the city, and I'm not saying that there is not bad in the city. There's crime, and there's scandal, and there's bankruptcy, and there's all these kinds of things that have gone on here. There's homelessness, prostitution, drug addiction, alcohol addiction, all that kind of stuff that goes on here. Gentrification is now happening. That can be seen as a good thing or a bad thing, depending on which side of that equation you're on. However, I also choose to see the good that is going on in the city, and to also be a part of the good that is going on in the city. You do have a lot of people moving here, a lot of young professionals who are kind of helping with the economy. You do see chain stores coming back to the city. You do see museums that are getting great programs and things that are free for children to go and be a part of. I took my daughter ice skating a few weeks ago, which is something I never would have thought to do. I was very bad at it, but something very cool that I was able to do for her. There's always something here to do in the city, and there are a lot of good people who are trying to bring this city back from the brink of destruction, so to speak, but also just like being a part of something bigger than themselves. And so God has called me here to be a part of the revitalization of the city, and also to be his hands and feet in the city as part of my local church community, which meets in the Midtown Detroit area. So that's why I'm in the city. But what about apologetics? Why apologetics specifically for the city? How can apologetics be different in the city than it is in rural areas? I'll get to that in just a second here. But why apologetics? Well, I grew up in the church. I grew up kind of always knowing who Jesus was. And as a child, I thought about Jesus like a child thinks about Jesus. He was kind of magical. I understood he was God. I understood that he was real. He was different than Santa Claus. He was different than the Tooth Fairy. He was different than, you know, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. He was real, and he was God, and he was somebody that loved me, and I should love him back, kind of like my parents. And so that's how I viewed God growing up. And then as I got older, I never really strayed away from that. I had questions, but I wasn't one of those people who felt like walking away from the Christian faith was a rite of passage. Okay, you know, I'll walk away and I'll come back when I'm 35. I have some kids and I have some guilt, and I think that, you know, Sunday school will be good for my kids because that's what I had growing up. I have always kind of stayed close to the faith. I have studied other world religions because that has always interested me. I've always had questions, though. I've always been that kind of nightmare kid in Sunday school who, when things didn't make make sense completely, I'd be raising my hand and asking questions. And generally, the Sunday school teacher wasn't really qualified to answer those questions, nor was Sunday school really the place to be necessarily asking those questions when you're dealing with other kids who don't have those questions. But because I had those questions, I was always kind of looking for ways to make the faith make sense to me in the real world. I wanted it to make sense in the world as it was coming to me and to my friends and to my family. So when I hit 10th grade, I was introduced to a book. I think it was like a spiritual formation class or something like that. I went to a small private Christian high school, and I was introduced to a book by Josh McDowell that was called More Than a Carpenter. And this book was a smaller version of his larger book. At that point, it was a two-volume book called Evidence That Demands a Verdict. That book was a seminal work, and it was a book that I ended up purchasing and thought was fantastic. I think it's kind of fallen out of favor nowadays, but I still think the information in it is fantastic. Either way, I was introduced to that, and it was my first foray into apologetics, which is a reasoned defense of the Christian faith, and we will talk about that here in a few minutes. But either way, apologetics has kind of always been something that's been on my radar since that point. I'm now 34, so it's been a number of years since high school. I've gone through college, got a ministry degree, got my master's degree in religious education, and so here I am now believing that apologetics is important for the city that I live in. But why apologetics for the city? How is apologetics different in the city than it is in suburbia or in rural America? Well, I believe that apologetics is all about, you know, giving reasoned defenses for why the Christian faith makes sense. And again, we'll talk about that in a few moments here. But in the city, I feel like people have questions that are very different than what they are in suburbia or in rural America. I believe that the questions come more frequently because of what you are faced with in the city. Questions like, why does a good God allow bad things to happen to good people, is a wholly different question when you see homelessness all the time, when you live in a major metropolitan city that has sex trafficking going through it all the time. It's very different than what's going on or may or may not be happening in the suburbs. When you have a higher rate of domestic violence calls, when you have police being shot and killed, when you have young men and women being, you know, shot and killed by, because they're in drug in gangs, these are the different kinds of issues that are facing people in the city. When you have gentrification, when a lot of young, upwardly mobile professionals move into an impoverished area and bring money with them, but the people who are poor there get moved out because they can no longer afford the services that come into that area with all of that money. How does God play into that? What does Jesus have to say about those kinds of things? How can faith make sense in light of what I'm seeing in the real world? Does this make sense? Is it rational to hold on to the Christian faith? And so really, these are the kinds of questions that are coming up, and these are the kinds of questions that I'm facing on a day-to-day basis. And I'm not even a pastor. I'm just a layperson. I'm just a normal Christian kind of going through life, work a retail job. I punch in 9 to 5, that kind of deal. So I'm nobody special, but I am somebody who is trained to a degree, and is passionate about helping people make sense of the faith in the real world as it's coming to them. And so that's why this podcast exists. And so each week, I'd like to put out an episode, maybe two a week. I don't know at this point how this is going to work, but this whole thing is about letting people know why I believe the Christian faith make sense in the real world, specifically in the real world as the city, the urban environment, the urban jungle presents it to us. And so I guess we should start off, though, with the question of what is apologetics? Because not everybody knows what apologetics is. I've said apologetics, apologetics, apologetics. However, I haven't explained really what it is. What are Christian apologetics specifically? Christian apologetics are reasoned defenses of Christian belief that starts with the foundation of faith in Jesus Christ as Lord. So what does that mean? It means that I am convicted that Jesus Christ is Lord. I have this foundation of faith in who Jesus is, who he claims to be. I believe that it is true. So, believing that Christ is who he says he is, I then turn and give defenses for why I believe this is true. This might seem backwards to skeptics, but think of it this way. It's almost, and I'm not trying to liken the Christian faith to car sales here, but if you went to a car dealership and it happened to be a Ford dealership, and the guy who was selling you this Ford car was telling you about all the virtues and the value of that particular brand, and then you happen to catch him leaving his shift and he's driving off the lot in a Honda, you might kind of have some questions about this. Okay, he just said that this brand makes sense to him, yet he's driving around in a Honda. How much does he really believe this? And so I have this foundation of faith in Jesus. I believe that Jesus is Lord. And because I believe that, I'm going to try to convince you that it is reasonable to believe in Jesus as Lord as well. I have faith in Jesus. Let's say Jesus was a product. He's not, but let's say that he was. Jesus is a person. I believe in Jesus as God. So it is my job to turn and then attempt to give you reasons why he is who he says he is. That doesn't mean that the Holy Spirit doesn't play a role in conversion. I'm not trying to convert you, but I am trying to show people this does make sense in the real world as it comes to us. Now, what does this mean? I'll tell you something that it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that we believe, Christians believe, it doesn't mean that Christians believe that we have to set aside our fundamental beliefs and our values in order to investigate how reasonable it is for us to hold them. That would be impossible. It wouldn't even be a good thing for people to do. But it does mean that we believe the Christian faith is consistent with rational and critical thinking. A lot of people feel like, okay, if you go to church on Sunday, you clock in and clock out. Pretty much. You walk in, you put your coat on the coat rack, and then you also hang your brains there as well. And then you go in, you hear, you sing some songs, you hear a sermon, you feel kind of inspired, but then you walk back out, grab your coat and grab your brain, put it back in your head, and you go out there into the real world where none of what you just heard makes any real sense. Now you're living your rational and critical life out in the real world. Jesus doesn't have anything to do with that. That could not be farther from the truth about the Christian faith. Christian faith is consistent with rational and critical thinking. So a Christian apologist, which is what I would consider myself to be, is someone who is a committed Christian who's motivated by this commitment to engage in rational and critical thinking about the Christian worldview in order to show that it's reasonable to adopt it. So again, kind of like that car salesman, I am motivated by my commitment to Jesus. I'm a committed Christian, and so I'm engaging in rational and critical thinking throughout my life, throughout my week. I don't hang up my brains at the door when I go into church on Sunday. As a matter of fact, some of my greatest questions have actually come while I'm sitting in a sermon. I rationally and critically think about the world as it's coming to me and what it means to be a follower of Jesus in that way, as a rational and critical creature. So, what does Christian apologetics do, though? What is it about? We've said what it is. What does it do? It does four distinct things, and I owe James E. Taylor for these reasons. Actually, I owe him a lot. He wrote the book Introducing Apologetics, which is a great textbook. It's not just kind of an easy read. It actually is a book meant for college courses. But if you do have the time and the money, pick it up. Read it. It's fantastic. I will actually be using it a lot and a number of other resources as I'm doing this podcast. But in his book, Introducing Apologetics, he gives four things that apologetics does. First, it gives reasons for thinking that the core claims of the Christian worldview are true. And he says that this is a watering thing. Okay, so kind of like a farmer tending to the soil. This is like tending to the soil of the mind, so to speak. So it's giving reasons for thinking that the core claims of the Christian worldview are true. To that end, he gives three other things that apologetics does that are more weeding. Okay, so now we've planted the seeds. Now we're tending our garden as weeds are kind of coming up and trying to choke the life out of that. And what are those three things? Okay, so Christian apologetics argues that objections against a Christian worldview do not succeed in showing that it's unreasonable or false. The next thing that Christian apologetics does is it gives reasons for thinking that the claims of worldviews that are logically inconsistent with the Christian worldview, such as naturalism and many but not all of the claims of Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, and Buddhism, are unreasonable or false. And then finally, Christian apologetics is going to argue that the arguments given for the claims of alternative worldviews that are inconsistent with Christianity do not succeed in showing that those alternative worldviews are true. And so the first thing is watering, and the last three are weeding, making sure that we are defending the Christian faith whimsically, so to speak. Okay, so these other people are coming along and giving arguments as to why Christianity is false and why these alternative viewpoints are true. And so the job of Christian apologetics is to show why Christianity is consistent with rational and critical thinking, and then to also be able to answer the objections of alternative worldviews and other world religions. That's what apologetics does. But what is the purpose? What's the purpose of apologetics? Okay, so we know what apologetics are. We know what it does. So what? Why do it? Why care about this? Isn't it the job of the Holy Spirit to convict people of the truthfulness of the gospel? I will say, absolutely. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't think about these things rationally and critically. And that's where classroom, you know, teaching comes in. That's where podcasts like this come in. That's where preaching and teaching comes in. We need to be instructed in what it means to think as a Christian should think. That doesn't mean that we're telling you what to do, but it does mean that, hey, you know what? This isn't coming to you like it was when you were a child, where you just kind of took everything that your mom and dad said about Jesus and kind of ran with it. The real world is pressing in now. How do you make sense of this? Okay, sit down and listen to people who have thought through this so that when you are out there facing the world, you're able to think through it as well. And so I would say that the purpose of Christian apologetics then is to cultivate Christian commitment in the believer and the non-believer alike. Obviously, the believer already believes, but you want them to be more committed to the faith, and the non-believer, you want them to make a decision for Christ. Now, again, apologetics alone is not going to do that. But for certain types of people who think certain types of ways, if you can show that Christianity is indeed rational, that can get rid of one roadblock. Could be many roadblocks that they have, but that can get rid of one roadblock, or at least help begin to lift one of the roadblocks in their life that makes room for, you know, God getting a hold of them, so to speak. So anyway, to cultivate Christian commitment in the believer and the non-believer alike is the purpose of Christian apologetics. And it does this, the purpose of Christian apologetics is kind of broken down into two different things, addressing two different types of concerns. First, perennial concerns, and then temporal concerns. Perennial concerns are questions and concerns that people have across all ages, across all cultures, across all times. Questions about the existence of God, the divinity of Christ, the possibility of miracles, the resurrection of Jesus, the problem of pain and suffering. These kinds of questions are perennial concerns. It doesn't matter where you are, how old you are, how long you've been alive, what culture you were raised in. These are questions that people have about God and life all the time. More temporal concerns would be concerns like polytheism. When the Old Testament patriarchs were writing the Old Testament, and when the New Testament apostles were writing, you know, the New Testament, writing their letters, polytheism was huge. The cultures that were surrounding them were very, very polytheistic. However, in our modern day and age, a lot of people are monotheistic. Now, this doesn't mean that we're not going to address polytheism at some point, because there are actually world religions and worldviews that do hold to multiple deities, such as the Baha'i faith or Hinduism specifically, all believe in multiple gods. And so at some point in this podcast, we will need to address polytheism. But that's more of a temporal concern now, because it is not it's not in vogue to believe in many, many gods, at least in most world cultures. And so, again, the purpose of Christian apologetics is to cultivate Christian commitment in the believer and non-believer, and it does this by answering perennial concerns, concerns that people have across all places, all times, all cultures, and then also addressing temporal concerns, concerns that will come up every now and again or are only going to be pertinent in certain cultures at certain times. So then, what's the focus of apologetics? What are we going to focus and drill down on in this particular podcast? Because I'm trying to be very cursory. I have time, obviously, because we have a lot of different episodes we can do, but there are different types of things that apologetics can focus on. So what's the focus of apologetics, and subsequently, what's the focus of this podcast? First, we want to address intellectual concerns. Obviously, I said we're not going to check our brains at the door, so there's going to be a lot of, you know, heady material. There's going to be a lot of things that are going to make you have to sit down and chew on and think about. So we're going to deal with intellectual concerns like skepticism, religious pluralism, higher radical criticism of scripture, scientific challenges such as Darwinism and evolution, and so on and so forth. So we'll be dealing with intellectual concerns, to be sure. But we'll also be addressing practical concerns. Certain books, certain textbooks aren't going to deal with those kinds of things, and so I'll be using different resources for more relational apologetics, dealing with practical concerns. So talking more about how do we bridge gaps and have natural, humble conversations with people about the reasonableness of the Christian faith. So one part intellectual, one part practical. I might go 1 week on, 1 week off. I'm not quite sure yet, but that's going to be the focus of Christian apologetics in general, and the focus of this podcast in particular. And finally, I want to talk about the limitations of apologetics. Confidence should not equal arrogance. I remember when I was younger, when I first got into apologetics, I loved beating people into the corner. I loved being able to just talk circles around them. I loved being able to make them feel like their point of view was stupid, they were stupid for holding on to it, and that I was right. More often than not, arguments were about me being right. And if I'm honest, sometimes I still get caught up in that, especially on Facebook arguments. I like to be right. I like to have the last word and so on and so forth. But I really do think that now as an adult, I've kind of tried to put a lot of that away. And we need to, when we're talking about this, confidence in the faith. I believe you can be confident, but that doesn't mean that you're a cut above someone. I like the way that I want to say that Rich Mullins put it this way, or maybe it was Brennan Manning, who Rich Mullins was greatly influenced by, but Christians are just one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. And so even if I feel I have the confidence of the faith, even if I feel like my answer is ultimately right, and that means that their answer is ultimately wrong, that doesn't mean I get to come at them with some sort of haughty spirit or my nose turned up in arrogance, saying that I am somehow better than them. Because really, I'm just one beggar trying to tell another beggar where to find bread. So to that end, apologists, anybody seeking to defend the Christian faith, should listen to and try to understand those with questions and concerns about Christianity. I know it's very easy to assume negative intent, to just assume that, oh, you don't believe in God because you hate God. That's it. And that very well may be true on the part of some, but to attribute that to everyone, I think, is foolish and shuts down conversation very quickly, because now you're accusatory or you're assuming what they're all about, and therefore your arguments as you bring them are speaking to someone other than who you're actually speaking to, which is really just a bad way of communicating. So listening to and trying to understand those with questions and concerns about Christianity without assuming, oh, they're only asking these questions to be belligerent. They're only asking these questions because they're scoffers. They're only asking these questions because they hate God. that's not fair. Also, apologists, we as apologists, we have to seek common ground with those with whom we disagree. I really like what C.S. Lewis said in his book, Mere Christianity. I'm going to read this quote here. And he says, quote, "If you are a Christian, you do not have to believe that all the other religions are simply wrong all through. If you are an atheist, you do have to believe that the main point in all the religions of the whole world is simply one huge mistake. If you are a Christian, you are free to think that all those religions, even the queerest ones, contain at least some hint of the truth. When I was an atheist, I had to try to persuade myself that most of the human race have always been wrong about the question that mattered to them most. When I became a Christian, I was able to take a more liberal view. But of course, being a Christian does mean thinking that where Christianity differs from other religions, Christianity is right and they are wrong. As in arithmetic, there is only one right answer to a sum, and all other answers are wrong. But some of the wrong answers are much nearer being right than others." End quote. I have always loved that comment from C.S. Lewis because it makes so much sense. When I was younger, I would come across people who were from different worldviews or different religions, and even if something in their world religion said the exact same thing that Christianity said on some point, I would still say that it was wrong. Even that didn't logically follow that it was wrong. I believed that that was right, but because it came out of their religion, I wanted to say that it was wrong. Christians need to establish common ground and not say that everything through and through in all religions is wrong. I believe that all truth is God's truth, no matter where it's coming from. So a Hindu might say, "Thou shalt not kill." That agrees with Scripture. Let's talk about that. Let's find that common ground and move out from there. Yeah, we're going to find differences. Yeah, we're going to disagree on some things, but let's start off with common ground. And we need to be open to the possibility that the reasons they give for their faith, or apologists specifically, we need to be open to the possibility that the reasons that we give for our faith are in need of improvement. I remember giving lots and lots of reasons that when I was younger that I now look back on. I'm like, wow, that really definitely needed some polishing up. That doesn't really hold water over the long haul. That needs to be jettisoned completely, or that particular argument needs to be jettisoned completely. That particular reason isn't actually a holistic reason. It's not a logical reason, so it should be abandoned. Apologists need to be humble enough to do this. We cannot go into every interaction or every conversation assuming that everything that we have said, every reason we have given, is a valid one for believing in God. And finally, and this is probably the hardest thing to do, is to speak of alternatives you disagree with in a positive light while defending the faith whimsically. So if someone comes to you and they're Mormon, and you know you disagree with them, or someone comes to you and they're Hindu, or they're Buddhist, or they're Jewish, or they're Islamic, and you know you disagree with them, speaking of what that person believes in negative terms, in wholly negative terms, does nothing to bolster your conversation. It does nothing to move the conversation forward. It does nothing to open them to hearing the gospel. It does everything to give them yet another reason to say, "That's why I'm not going to listen." Now, ultimately, they're going to have to give account to God, and they're not going to be able to point and say, "Well, that guy is the reason I didn't become a Christian." But there's no reason to be that guy if you don't have to be that guy. Be that guy for the right reasons, not for the wrong reasons. So when you are speaking with someone, assume positive intent. Assume that they care about the same things you do, about their family, about their friends, about where their next meal is going to come from, about, you know, how they're going to make it through paying for school, about how they're going to feed their kids, those kinds of things. And speak about, okay, why does the faith that they're holding to give them peace? Why does the faith they're holding to make sense of the world for them? Engage them on those terms, and I believe that you'll find people who are more open to hearing what you have to say. Some people are afraid that if you are open to them or speak of alternatives in a positive light, that you will then be the person who becomes converted. I have never seen that to be the case. I don't think that it is the case. That doesn't mean in the history of the world that's never happened, but I do believe that you catch more flies with honey, and I believe if you are shored up in your faith, if you are convinced of your faith, if you are confident in your faith, that I believe that God will continue to hold you even in the face of the greatest opposition, whether it's in a college class and your professor telling you that there is no God and we all know it, or talking to the soccer mom who is spiritual but not religious, or speaking to the militant atheist who just, you know, hates everything about organized religion. People are all coming from different places and speaking about all of those alternatives and all of those different places in a positive light is a great place to begin the conversation. So that's what I wanted to offer in this first episode. I wanted to talk about what Christian apologetics are, you know, what they do, what the purpose is, what the focus of apologetics and this podcast are going to be, and then the limitations of Christian apologetics. Next week, we will kind of begin to lay the groundwork for more of what this podcast will be focusing on in the coming weeks and months. But again, thanks so much for listening. My name is Calvin Moore, and I'll see you next week.